Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
The martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Fanula Jones, Deirdre Malumbi and Linda Coogan. Join us once again for Movies and Booze. Good afternoon to you all.
Hello.
Afternoon.
So Silent Night, Deadly Night. Not subtle.
No, it's not.
In terms of so is it what it says in the tin, largely speaking?
Pretty much, yeah. It's this kind of slasher comedy horror. Now, I didn't realise Silent Night, Deadly Night is apparently a whole franchise. I'd never heard of it before this film.
Oh, right. So is this Silent Night, Deadly Night 7 or...
Something. Yeah, it's literally the seventh one.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, the original one was out in 1984 when you did start getting this trend of like kind of Christmas horror movies. Like, remember, Gremlins was out then. I feel like the original Black Christmas might have been in or around then as well. So it's continuing that sort of trend for those who aren't into the kind of Hallmark style romantic comedy cheesy sort of Christmas movies. You can get yours with lots of gore if you so wish.
And Ella McKay is James L. Brooks. Directs this, does he?
Yeah, he directed it and wrote it. So he would have also done like As Good As It Gets. Now, some of his like more recent efforts have kind of been a bit more mixed, but just to make things very confusing, Ella McKay in this film is played by Emma Mackey, the sex education star. And it's kind of one of these like feel good kind of comedy drama sort of movies with a bit of like feel good politics thrown in, apparently.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's the sort of thing he does, really, in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's probably... Because, you know, I did mention at the start that The Simpsons and Taxi and The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah. He has some, like, you know, big
He's more telly, really, credentials in film.
Yeah, I suppose so. But, like I said, he has had some big ones in the past. He also directed Terms of Endearment, in case you don't remember, way back when.
How old is he now?
Old?
Yeah, he's got to be old. And so what wines are we talking about today, Linda?
Winter warmers. Mm-hmm. And I know sometimes people think of big full-bodied reds when you say that, or big heavy ports and that. Well, I'm actually doing a toasty, oaky white and a kind of rapace style red that's real rich and smooth and silky, and they're really, really delicious to kind of for cozier. We're saying it's not that cold at the moment. It's due to get a bit of a little chill coming, so these are kind of sitting in sipping wines for winter warmers to warm you up while you're watching all those great movies.
Okay, look out for Krampus, spelt with a K. A few years ago, fantastic Christmas horror with a great ending.
I really want to watch it. I think Adam Scott's in it. Sorry, I was talking about it recently with friends, but I've never seen it.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be good, I think.
Good. I have heard good things.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Stop for a minute. You were going to, I haven't heard that one either. Christmas horror isn't my genre. So Liam Neeson's gone anti-vax.
I mean, well, he's saying he's not.
Yeah.
But he's lent his voice. He's narrating this new documentary that questions the legitimacy of vaccines. So I don't know how you say that you're not anti-vax then when you do that, but I digress. This is a film called Plague of Corruption. He's narrating it. It's by it's based on a best-selling book by Judy Mikovits, who is this like disgraced former scientist who during the COVID pandemic came out and basically said that, you know, COVID was caused by a bad strain of the flu vaccine and was basically telling people not to get vaccinated. He's narrating this film. He's now, and obviously people have pushed back on this being like, why would you narrate a film about this if you didn't also share these views? And his statement through his representatives has said, we all recognise that corruption can exist within the pharmaceutical industry, but that should never be conflated with opposition to vaccines. Liam never has been and is not anti-vaccination. His extensive work with UNICEF underscores his long-held support for global immunisation and public health initiatives. He did not shape the film's editorial content, and any questions about its claims or messaging should be directed to the producers. Because that's like, he's on record in 2022 as part of his work with UNICEF being like, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially, like, vaccines are great, like, yeah, the greatest accomplishment science could ever brought. Like, this is a documentary that features, you know, there's talking heads with people saying, and this is a direct quote, the big problem with vaccines is that they just aren't safely tested, which isn't true. Like, it's just, oh, it's, I don't know what he was thinking, because you have all these people coming out, the co-author of the...
Yeah, but hang on, his statement sounds like, I read out words, but I didn't know what they meant.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Which is, and again, he's reading out, like, it's just one of the things that he has to read. The documentary is viewed by The Guardian, and so they have the narration, and one of the bits that Liam Neeson reads says that the pro-vaccine side have demanded, quote, unconditional submission to our public institutions, and, quote, science has become dangerously politicised. So as you said, you're reading that and going, well, I just read words off a page, you know, and probably got paid an undisclosed sum of money to do so. You know what I mean? Is that it? Are your morals willing to bend that much?
But I would have thought it wouldn't be money. Is Pamela Anderson anti-vax? She's not, you know.
Well, they're not together anymore either.
Oh, so. Are they not? They break up?
No. Yeah, she came out recently and said it was a very short-lived dalliance, yeah.
Oh, right, okay, sorry.
Maybe that's what was keeping it all together.
Maybe that's, yeah.
Maybe she's the pro-vaccine and then when he broke up,
his heartbreak, and
went
it's gone.
The other side.
Oh, no.
But it's just, I got my flu vaccine yesterday because I'm hearing of so many people ill and everything like that, and even speaking to the pharmacist in there saying people should have been getting this mid-October, but there was, I don't know, and, like, there's obviously loads of factors why people didn't get it. I'm not trying to put it down to that, but it's just... It's because he's such a big figure and he's so well regarded. I'm like, this adds legitimacy to someone who is like a disgraced former scientist is like completely discredited. Like, it's.
And Robert Lincoln, what's his name? Kennedy's on us as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, this does not have a good list of...
It's the choo-choo train to Lula Town.
Yeah,
really.
Kent...
Why would he? He must maybe get on the wrong train.
Kent Heck and Lively, which, incredible surname, I will say, executive producer, has previously written books with Alex Jones, far-right radio host. I mean, that's company you'd want to keep, isn't it? No, absolutely
it's
not.
It's an odd one. I'm very... Tut, Liam, if you're listening. Right, okay. The Warner Brothers Netflix merger, is it not happening now? Is Paramount a third party coming into it? It's very complicated.
So last week, as we were just going to air, it was confirmed that Netflix is buying Warner Brothers, and it was like we were all pontificating the end of the cinema and what it all meant and stuff like that. There'd been a bidding war going on since September, and it was basically when Warner Brothers launched this formal sale process, then that's when Netflix kind of came in. Paramount are coming back now and they've retaliated with this all cash offer. So they're looking at $30 per share. I think it equates to $108.4 billion. Again, money I can't even conjure in my head, but it's more than the Netflix deal if they do accept it. I'm not sure if they will, given kind of everything we've kind of gone through over the last few weeks. There's still a long time to go in this. I think Netflix have said, because obviously they've had to come out and say, don't worry, prices aren't going to go up, it's fine, it just means we're going to have all this great, we're going to have the Harry Potters and we're going to have Friends and everything, it's going to be great, and don't worry about films going to cinemas, they'll still be in cinemas, whatever, it's fine. But I think they are expecting, unless they do end up taking the Paramount deal, which, again, it's a lot of money, but I think this is kind of nearly sewn up. I'd say they're expecting it to close within 12 to 18 months, I'd say. So the earliest we'll see this actually kind of solidify is December 2026, but it could be as late as summer 2027. So it's kind of still rolling on. The issue with Paramount is that your man that's running it now is so busy with Trump that's where it might come in and go.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Actually, you can't do that. But then that also, it doesn't benefit anyone really then. Like, it's...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Right. And Disney's investing $1 billion into AI,
OpenAI. Yeah, do you know what? I haven't come here today with any good news, I will say. You know the way we criticise sometimes when I come here? When I come in and we go, oh, we're talking about a sequel again. She's talking about Look Who's Talking 6. I wish we were talking about Look Who's Talking 6. Instead, I'm talking about Disney investing $1 billion into OpenAI, and specifically its Sora platform, which is like, you can basically create like short form AI-generated content.
Yes, I've seen it, yeah.
So they're investing in this, so it's basically what it means is you can basically create AI generated content, but you'll be able to do it alongside like 200 characters from the Disney universe. So that's like Marvel, Pixar, Star Wars. You want to go to the shop and get a chicken fillet roll with Darth Vader? Now you can. Incredible, the content we all were scrambling for. It's a 3-year deal. People are kind of saying, oh, well, like, this is the best way to do it so that people don't capitalize eyes off Disney's content. It's their kind of way of cracking down on it. But I mean, they've already had to walk back stuff. Like when Sora originally launched in October, Sam Altman, who's OpenAI head fella, they had to like walk back features because, you know, they were using like celebrity likeness and you were having celebrities say and do whatever they want. Mm. Even today on my TikTok, I was getting, you were seeing this issue of digital blackface where people were creating Sora videos of predominantly black women kind of say, like reinforcing these stereotypes people have against black women and just this kind of wild west that it's become. And it's kind of in opposition with, they had actually they had a lawsuit against another AI competitor that's called Midjourney in July. They'd sued them over generative AI that they were making Darth Vader based images, which are obviously based on Disney IP, and the studio wasn't getting compensated properly. So like, people are saying they have to do this to kind of protect the IP. Hmm. But then it is also a bit like, is this an absolute Pandora's box? Like what does this actually mean for the future of the content we get? And like, what is the actual, like, who is actually crying out for, I don't care what I look like next to Switch, a Stitch on a surfboard. You know what I mean? Like, I've no desire to see that.
But you can use like Disney characters in when this is up and running. Like, you can have Mickey Mouse smoking a crack pipe type thing.
I mean, essentially, yeah. So I think it's debuting in early 2026. But this is what I mean. This is that it's probably going to be so broad, and then they'll have to walk it back because people abuse it, because the technology is a bit kind of too powerful in some respects, and in the wrong hands, you have Mickey Mouse saying, honestly, whatever, God knows what, you know? Like, it's not good, I think. And the level of money that they're investing is really like deeply, like $1 billion is completely frightening.
They could spend $1 billion on lawsuits to stop them doing this kind of thing.
And maybe that's where they're thinking, this is a better investment than having to go after people.
Everyone's just giving in to all this
stuff. This is the thing. Like, it's like, what does it matter when you're having people trying to like resist using ChatGPT and stuff, when Disney's like, well, it doesn't matter, I'm giving Sam Altman so much money to do whatever people want, essentially. It's sad, guys. I wish I was talking about Look Who's Talking Six, but
we all need a drink now. Linda, come to the rescue.
Cheers, I will.
Yeah. Cheers.
So this is Herdade Esparão, which is a Portuguese white from Alentejo region. And Esparão is one of the oldest domains in the Alentejo and the biggest. They're a big, big operation, and this is the Reserva, which does mean something. Mm. So this is a blend of native grapes from Portugal. So it's Andovaz, Arinto, all these little grapes that we've never heard of. It doesn't matter. But there's no, you know, it's not Sauvignon, it's not Chardonnay, but it has this gorgeous, unique texture to the wine. So on the nose, you're going to get really kind of tropical notes, exotic fruits, peachy, stone fruit. Isn't it nice?
It's on the back of the throat, you kind of get it after a second.
It's a warmer, So it's got toasty oak as well. So it's got a blend of French and American oak for 6 months, and it just really kind of softens the wine. I had this for Christmas dinner a couple of years, not just this. I had this with
That's a completely
Christmas
different image in our heads then.
With my Christmas dinner a couple of years ago. And I just think it's a real tick the box, but you need to look for the Reserva. And this particular vintage, they get an artist to change the label every single year. So this vintage 2023 has a green, gorgeous, isn't that lovely colour green?
It's kind of a shiny green.
But it changes every single vintage. They get a different artist to come in and do their little thing. And I would pick up any vintage of it. I've never had a bad bottle. So I would highly recommend.
And it's Esparão. Is that how you
would say it?
Yeah.
Reserva.
Reserva.
And the red as well is also fantastic. They're both cracking winter warmers. So
Okay. Yeah, delicious. Right, excellent. What movie would you like to do first?
Well, we start with Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Silent Night, Deadly Night, coming up next.
Tonight, we remind ourselves that Christmas is still a white Christian holiday that no one can take away from us. So, grab a drink, make out with someone under the mistletoe, and have some fun. Oh!
Okay, so what are we thinking? Stakeout? Wait for to use the John?
No, we kill them all.
Whoa, hold on. Let's talk about this.
Nothing to talk about.
For Christ's sake, at least get a gun.
Hey, Santa, You want me to check that out?
Ew, that sounded painful. So that was Silent Night, Deadly Night. Is it also Silent Night, White Supremacist Night, given the quote from the start there?
That's actually a very funny scene in the movie, I have to say. It had the audience in absolute stitches. And this is the kind of movie that would benefit from watching with an audience. I always find that's the way with comedies generally anyway. But yeah, there were some bits that were like very dumb, and I did find myself giggling in spite of myself because it helps when you're kind of surrounded by people. But story-wise, we are following Billy, who as a child witnessed the murder of his parents and has ended up growing up to become a serial killer. So every time he commits murders, it's around Christmas time. He wears a Santa costume. He dons an axe, and he's kind of been a drifter all his life because, like, naturally, you know, when you kill a number of people in an area, you probably like want to be moving on.
Yeah.
So you're not kind of caught and all that.
No, we don't. We're not recommending this, by the way, listeners, and we're not by no means giving instructions.
Exactly.
Deirdre Mumby will not be responsible if you murder someone.
But that might all change because he's met a girl called Pamela, who he kind of sees, love at first sight. He follows her into a Christmas decoration shop and he gets a job there.
So creepy.
It is a bit creepy. But it turns out that her dad actually owns this shop and she also works there. They both talk to each other. She's a little bit of a weirdo as well. She's kind of enigmatic and explosive. And Billy wonders if she might be a kindred spirit because obviously he's a bit mad. He's a murderer.
Yeah.
And also he hears this head, this voice in his head, which you would have heard in the clip, which kind of tells him what to do, what to say, who to kill and stuff like that. But as the film kind of proceeds, it turns out that maybe there might be a method to Billy's madness and maybe, just maybe, he's not so evil after all. But maybe you have to watch the film to find out more.
Okay. That's a dramatic twist then.
It is.
Yeah.
It is a dramatic twist.
So is it funny all the way through, as like, or is it mostly gore and then the odd laugh kind of thing?
I think it's a bit of both. It's a bit of both. Like I found myself laughing out loud at several points in this. There are some really great lines in it. It is schlocky, like every time something dramatic happens or there's some like kind of revelation or something scary, there's kind of that boom, you know, the boom that they put in the movies, and they overuse it for sure in this film. But it's very self-aware. It knows how schlocky it is. It's silly. It never takes itself too seriously. So it is a bit of fun. But like I said, it's clearly not going to be a movie that's for everyone. There is a large cohort of people out there who kind of watch their go-to Christmas classics. Romantic comedies tend to be the go-to genre that they'll kind of take out time and time again. Or there are those people who, you know, every single new Christmas movie that lands on a streaming service, and they just seem to like put out so many every year.
Oh,
like
yeah.
At some point, Netflix seems to be just putting out a new Christmas, like Netflix original Christmas movie a year. It's crazy how many they have. And there are people who will go and watch all those films, and that Christmas horror isn't for them at all. But at the same time, there's also another audience out there that enjoys this kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Is it very gory for people who... Would it be for people who don't like blood and that kind of
stuff?
Ah,
yeah, it's pretty gory. Yeah. It's probably, I forgot to check the rating on it, but I'd imagine it's kind of or maybe 18s rated. So it'd be pretty bloody,
yeah.
You know, from the get-go.
Yeah. There are like channels now that spring up out of nowhere that show continuous Christmas movies. And like, it's astounding how many of them there are.
Yeah, yeah. And there are so many new ones every single year. It's just crazy.
How do they make money?
I don't know. I don't know. And I mean, like, I remember there was some year on Netflix where I actually did, I don't know why I decided to commit to this, but I decided to watch all the Netflix original movies out that year. And there was something like, there was like a Lindsay Lohan one, there was a Freddie Prinze Jr.
She's
one.
She's in loads of them.
Yeah, and there was a kind of, I don't think it was Nicholas Sparks, but it felt exactly like Nicholas Sparks kind of movie. And they're just, yeah, there's so many. And you kind of, you do find yourself being like, ah, yeah, this one actually wasn't too bad, but it's only compared to the other ones, which are
and
horrendous.
They're so cheap,
yeah.
You see, I'm saying this because I have children who go, I love this stuff.
Yeah.
And then they will watch them wall to wall. And you're looking at people having their Christmas dinner on a miserable old pine table. And there's nothing wrong with pine tables, but it looks like the most inhospitable Christmas dinner. But obviously that was, you know, we'll pull that out of the corner for this bit of the set. And then we'll all turn around and pretend we're some completely different place.
Yeah, and it's...
And they always have Lindsay Lohan in them.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's weird as well, the ones that kind of crop up again, because like I said, it's getting to the point where every year you have so many, how can they become like... distinguishable at this point. But I've noticed that the Kurt Russell one, The Christmas Chronicles, that one keeps popping back into the top 10 on Netflix every year. So some of them have had staying power, in fairness to them.
Yeah, because that's not bad.
Oh, I didn't like that one.
Did you not?
He's too grumpy. I like my Santa's jolly.
They need to be jolly, Klaus, I know, is maybe a different category because I know it's animated, but
I do love Klaus.
That's a cracker.
That's a brilliant
one. It's absolutely not in the same category, but one to watch and for the streamers.
Silent Night is rated 16.
Okay.
Apparently. Fair. So, you know, there or thereabouts. Right. Loda Pettigrew from Ireland has, she's going to be in Assassin's Creed.
Yes. The Netflix adaptation. I think I talked about this a few weeks ago. They're not starting production until 2026 in Italy. And we don't know anything about her role, but people know her from Say Nothing. That was on Disney Plus and based off the book Assassin's Creed. For anyone that's not familiar, it's based off, it's like one of the best selling video game franchises of all time. It'll be a high octane thriller. I think they're looking at different characters from different characters from the games, and two shadowy factions. And yeah, it'll be very exciting, I think.
Have they not made Assassin's Creed before?
They made a film that I believe it was either Jake Gyllenhaal or Michael Fassbender.
I think Michael Fassbender was in it.
And I think it maybe flopped a smally bit or wasn't hugely successful. So maybe they're hoping to right the wrongs of this. I've never played the game, so I'm not hugely familiar with it, but it's very, I think it had a newer iteration in the last few years that did really, really well and fans are very, very into it. So,
all right. Okay. Fair enough. So I suppose if they do it right. Now, and Lily Allen is going to adapt West End Girl. Is it West End Girl or West End Girls?
The album is West End Girl.
Yeah, okay, right.
The album is West End Girl.
Their hate album against your man.
That's probably the fairest description of it. She's adapting it as a stage show, or at least in talks to do it. She's been on the circuit because she's on Saturday Night Live tomorrow. So she's been doing, obviously, all the American chat shows, and she was on Jimmy Fallon and said that they were working on adapting the album for the stage, which makes sense. I think if you listen to the album, the way it's kind of constructed, even the track list, you could visualize it as a stage show. And she obviously has acting background herself, like she's Olivier nominated and stuff like that. She didn't say whether she was going to actually be in it, but or when it was happening. It's all very preliminary talks, but I would go see it. That is a show that I would go see. It'd be interesting to see what actually does. As much as they're saying, oh, when I listened to it, I could see it as a show. It'd be interesting to see what actually transfers. And also when it's like her story, if she's not in it, like who plays her and then who plays David Harbour allegedly? Yeah. If the album is about him, wink, who knows? Yeah. You know, like how do you separate that from the reality of it? But
yeah, well, in the album, is it all heavily disguised? It could be someone.
No, but I think she's described it, and I don't know if this is just kind of her maybe kind of covering her own back a small bit. Mm. She's described it as autofiction, where it's kind of like there is, what is the description? What is the actual definition?
Autofiction is when the author is the main character in the, it's
yeah,
usually a novelistic
I think some thing. Of it is real and not, but not all of it, or all of it is real, but not all of it happened to her necessarily.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Then like some of the subject matter is so specific that it's like, well, of course this happened. And of course, it's happened to you because the level of detail is incredible. So we'll see. One to watch there. She's busy anyway, flat out touring. So she's in Ireland next year. So sold out the Three Arena. So.
All right. Fair dues to her.
News Talk's Christmas Cash Machine.
There you go. Congratulations to Shomek there. I think you might have to lie down in a bit for a wee while just until the news of that filters through. As Barry said, their new total on the cash the hard shoulder. Coming up next, don't know what it'll be. Probably be a tenner. I'd say we've run out of money at this stage of the game. Let's toast his good fortune.
Absolutely, well done. So this is again a lovely winter warmer. It's one of my favourite producers, the Nato from Italy, in the Valpolicella region. So this is the Rapassa, and it is a really interesting way that they make this wine. And basically what you're looking for with this is a grape called Corvina. They don't tell you on the back of the label what the grapes are, but really you need to look out for good quality producers. And Zanato is one of the top ones in the region. And they use 85% of a grape called Corvina, which is the quality grape, which gives a gorgeous structure to this wine. And again, native grapes, Rondinella, another one. And This is just stick your nose in this, folks. Oh my God. Mm,
yeah.
It's a Christmas in a glass, okay? So it's got, do you want to smell? It's delish. So it's got really, really ripe, sweet cherries, plums, real complex. And that's because they make it by basically making the wine, the Valpolicella. And when they make the better quality, the Amarone wine, they actually lay out the grapes to dry out for 3-4 months. And after that's done, they put this regular wine, Valpolicella wine, through, repasses through it, so it gets more alcohol, more depth of concentration, flavours. It's like raisins that it's going over again. Mm. And it just, like, it's so silky, the tannins are so soft. And this, for me, like, they recommend you have it with, like, party stews, venison, things like that, real robust, slow-cooked ragouts. But hard cheese and an after dinner, just sit down, you know, the sipper. Like this, you know, it's 14% alcohol, which is fine.
Yeah.
But it's really, really rich, smooth, complex, and just so silky. They have it aged for 18 months in big barrels as well, just to soften the edges. So this is 2020 vintage, and it comes in half bottle, full bottle, and magnum.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So you can kind of, like, it's a real showstopper of a wine, and it's a real treat for people. So you can get that one in Donnybrook Fair, Wheelhins, Sweeney's, 64, Pinto, Malloy's, Wine Online, and lots of other good independents.
And the way they make it, Linda, it's almost like filtering it through the Rapasso grapes. Yeah, is that an unusual?
Yeah. Like, it's only in this region that they, like, it's famous. It's DOC. It's a quality, unique style since the 1980s that they've kind of trademarked this. To do that process, it's really unique, and it just adds complexity and layers and concentrated flavours to the wine, and it gives it that smooth, silky richness. And because the Amarone grapes are raisin, dried out to raisin, like Amarone would be a 16.5% wine, much more depth. But I think this is more approachable. Mm. Amarone, if you really want to treat yourself,
knocks
and
your
you definitely
off.
Want to sit down, Amarone. But for me, this is more of an everyday that everybody would like, whereas an Amarone you might kind of hold off for a special occasion. This wine is for any occasion.
Yeah, and an Amarone, yeah, you do need to drink it sitting down because you won't get up again. Right. There's going to be, explain this, Fionnuala, there's going to be a Hunger Games prequel, but Jennifer Lawrence is going to be in it. How does that work?
So this is based on the book called Sunrise on the Reaping by Suzanne Collins. And it basically, if you're familiar with the Hunger Games franchise, it follows Haymitch's games, his Hunger Games. Haymitch is Katniss's advisor in the first book and film. Yeah. He was played by Woody Harrelson in the first film. So it follows like his game. So it's 24 years before Katniss and Peeta's games.
Gotcha.
Katniss played by Jennifer Lawrence, Peeta played by Josh Hutcherson. They've just been announced for the film, which comes out, I think it's November 20th next year, and Francis Lawrence is directing. How are they in it, I hear you ask? As far as I'm aware in the book, there are, I haven't read the book, but I'd imagine it's flashbacks to maybe
Flash forwards, rather. Or is it flashbacks?
Flash forwards. Sorry, I'm getting confused at my time because obviously, technically it's flash forwards. All very confusing. Flash forwards where it's like probably Haymitch, I would imagine, telling them, you know, regaling them about his time in the arena and stuff like that. I'd imagine this was something that maybe they would have liked to have kept hush hush, maybe. But I'd say people who are obsessed with Hunger Games are upset, and they haven't, this is their first time coming back. There have been other prequels since Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, and they didn't reprise their roles for that. Very exciting for Hunger Games people. So I'd say it was just a case of, we can't keep this under wraps, so we'll put it out. Like, they could be in it for 4.5 seconds, you know what I mean? We actually don't know.
Right, okay.
But that's coming out next year. Very good cast, like very strong cast. There's one, Elle Fanning's in it, a few others.
Is Woody Harrelson in it?
I actually don't know if he's confirmed to return. There's another actor obviously playing him because he's a younger version of him.
Yeah.
They're not using the de-aging, thank God. But no, I don't know if he's confirmed to return to it.
Well, that'd be hard to make that work then.
Yeah, unless it's, because then how do you set up that scene with the two of them being there? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not fully sure on that.
They did something similar with Remember the Hobbit. It opens with Ian Holm and Ian McKellen.
Yes.
Before it flashes back, and then Martin Freeman is, you know, the Hobbit or whatever.
Hobbiting.
So I suppose it's like a framing device, and it's fan service. That's all it is.
No, it's 100%. When I say like the reaction to this was apoplectic, like it's, people are so, so delighted about this.
Yeah. But when you say fan service, that means they're pretty sure it'll make money. Because there's enough fans there.
Oh, 100%. Like, it's, I don't have the figures to hand here now, but like, it's a hugely, hugely successful franchise. And even that last one, The Ballads of Songbirds and Snake, which is essentially, again, I know it's part of the same franchise, but you were setting up with entirely new actors and entirely new characters. That did incredibly well at the box office. And with this, at least you have the thing of, oh, it's a callback to the original books. Like, you're watching Haymitch, like, you knew. You know Haymitch. You're watching him actually do, you know, like, obviously it's a different version, but there's kind of more buy-in there, you know. People are obsessed with The Hunger Games. Like, they love The Hunger Games.
So they don't, but I suppose what's interesting about that, they're making films now in you know, that are kind of based on a series of books, and they don't care if anybody else goes to see it. They know there's an audience there, so.
Yeah, because
they could be all sitting around playing, you know, playing instruments and talking rubbish.
Well, I guess for the audiences, see, they're pulling both from the fans of the books, because these like prequels have been like published in relatively recent years, and fans of the original films as well. So there is a potentially really big audience there.
I've no doubt. Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is called Ella McKay. Here's a clip.
I have never been this angry where it is unbearable. You can't imagine what it feels like. You can't. I need to act on it.
You're wrong. I can't imagine how it feels.
You're
sitting on it.
That must be very frustrating.
Correct.
Well, that's what not screaming will get you. Hmm? So, listen, Ella, I do have something. Well, we should do that every afternoon.
Yeah, we should. Tremendous, tremendous feeling.
That was quality screaming there. I thought that was Silent Night, Deadly Night there for a second. But what's happening there? She's screaming to vent her feelings.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So the whole idea of this character, Ella McKay, is she's this idealistic 34-year-old woman. She's kind of struggling through family issues. She's got a demanding work life. She's recently gotten an opportunity. So she currently works as lieutenant governor, but now she's gotten an opportunity to become
of a state?
Governor. Yeah, of a state.
Okay, but she's still idealistic. State.
Yeah.
That's a reach, but go on.
Well, it works here. I mean, the whole idea is it's set in 2008, the Obama administration, when, you know, things were a lot more optimistic back then, in case we don't remember. But yeah, it's, but you would have heard Ella there and her aunt, who is played by Jamie Lee Curtis, who basically took her under her wing when she was a teenager. She's a very kind of no-nonsense, sharp and ever reliable source of support for Ella. So yeah, this film is full of those kind of like cheesy and sweet little like family moments. Woody Harrelson, we were just talking about him, he's in the cast as well. He plays Ella's father, who they've become estranged over the years because he's basically been in and out of courts all her childhood as a serial sexual harasser. And now he's trying to like make
she's idealistic.
And now he's trying to kind of reconnect with her and her brother, who suffers from agoraphobia. A very good performance there by Spike Fern. You've also got Kamal Nanjiani in the cast. He kind of plays her security. And you've got Jack Lowden, a.k.a. Mr. Saoirse Ronan, who plays Ella's husband.
Okay.
So it's a great cast. I felt a bit kind of mixed about this movie, if I'm being perfectly honest. I really liked Ella as a character. She's smart and she's steely and she's trying to be optimistic against, you know, as you rightly
Super
pointed
out, yes.
very difficult circumstances. And she's kind of like got this adorable, like, awkwardness to her and everything. And it is quite a sweet and uplifting movie. It's kind of got those themes of being a Christmas movie without necessarily being a Christmas movie, because it doesn't technically have like the snow and the decor and all of that. But I did feel like the kind of the sweetness of it could feel a bit like saccharine and almost a bit forced at points. But then again, you know, there are people who are just like kind of looking for this like, you know, sweet, feel good kind of family movie with a bit of comedy, a bit of drama in it. And it is ultimately, you know, a nice ending and all of that, not to give it away or anything. Yeah. But it's a nice movie. It just wouldn't be for me. It was just a little too sweet for my taste.
Yeah, well, it doesn't sound like the sort of film where everybody dies in the end. Or, but is the story arc that she might get to be a governor of whatever state this is.
Yeah, exactly. And then in the background, she's got her father who's trying to force her way back into her and her brother's life. She's trying to look after her brother who, like I said, suffers with agoraphobia. She's also got her husband who initially was kind of, you know, celebrating the fact that she's gotten this promotion, but now he's kind of starting to express a bit of insecurity and stuff there. So there's a lot of things that she's trying to kind of work with and balance with and keep this like big smile on her face at the same time. So it's really all about her kind of, you know, struggles.
Right.
And
so
and Emma Mackey's great in the role and everything. So
So Woody Harrelson is her dad and Jamie Lee Curtis is her mother?
No, her aunt.
Her aunt, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because there was a slight age disparity between Woody and Jamie Lee. That explains it then. Okay. But it sounds like something that this is in cinemas, though.
Yeah. Like, I feel like, I think my mom would really like it. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it sounds like this time next year, you'd be here bouncing a baby on your knee and going, yeah, it's huge on Netflix. Everyone's watching it. It sounds like one of them, maybe.
Yeah, something like that, exactly. Yeah, but, but like I said, it's kind of, if you're looking for those kind of, like, themes, it is the right time of year for a movie like this to come out. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. So, finally, Cillian Murphy is back to take the big bucks for, well, you see, it's 28 years later, but or 28 years later, what are they going to call the next one?
I don't know what they're going to call the next one.
128 years
28
later.
Decades later?
280 years
words.
Later.
It's too many syllables. Yeah, look, not confirmed, but he is in talks to return. He obviously skipped the last one. He skipped 28 years later, even though everyone kind of rudely thought he was one of the zombies amongst
it. It did look kind of Killian-ish.
It did look. Yeah. Killian, it did. Let's call a spade a spade here.
It had fabulous cheekbones. Yeah. That was the thing.
Alex Garland is working on the script, who's worked on all of the previous films except for 28 Weeks Later. Danny Boyle is back to direct. Like, no word on this. As I said, still very early talks. But the next, there's kind of a middle, what you call a middle sequel these days? I don't know. 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple is out in January, which follows Ralph Fiennes' character from the last film.
Okay.
Early action on social media is supposed to be very good. Supposed to be very, very good. Because I know 28 Years Later, I feel like kind of divided people, left people a little bit cold. Some people really liked it, some people really didn't. So that's coming in January. And then I'd imagine if this does come to fruition, we'd get in the next few years. But like, Killian's busy, as you said. He's got the Peaky Blinders film, which we got the title for that I can't remember off the top of my head, but that's coming to Netflix, himself and Barry Keoghan. So yeah, he's busy. He's coming back to the franchises. So he's giving that franchise money. And you know what? Dead right, Killian.
Well, maybe he kind of feels, you know, he's done like kind of quite serious, well, Peaky Blinders, I don't know if you put in that category, but, you know, quite serious work since the Oscar, and maybe he feels it's, you know, to kind of vary the palette kind of thing, do something a bit more kind of schlocky.
Yeah.
What was that? Now, before 28, what was the gap between 28 Weeks Later and 28 Years Later?
Do you mean in years of terms of release?
Yeah. Yeah. My sense is a hell of a long time. And then then all of a sudden he's knocking them out, you know.
It was a long time, yeah. But I can't remember off the top. I feel like it was more than 5 years, less than 10.
But days and weeks were quite close together. It was a weird one.
Well, they tend to be.
Yeah. 28 Weeks Later was 2007. And then 28 Years Later was this year? Last year?
Yeah, last year. So that's a big gap.
Yeah.
So has Alex Rowland perhaps run out, or Alex Garland run out of ideas, and he's just gone, yeah, might as well.
Yeah, maybe. One last hurrah for the zombies.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fair juice. Yeah. 2025, 28 years later is the answer to that. Thank you to Fionnuala, Deirdre and Linda.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
The martini, shaken not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.